There is a version of casino management that treats the floor as a machine. Inputs go in. Dealers, tables, procedures, schedules. Outputs come out. Hands per hour, theoretical win, end of shift reports. On paper, the job looks like coordination and oversight. Keep the tables running, manage the rotations, handle disputes, submit the numbers. Mechanical, measurable, repeatable. The problem with that version is that the inputs are people. People do not behave like components in a system. They respond to how they are treated. They perform better or worse depending on the environment around them. They notice when they are respected and when they are not, when their effort is seen and when it is invisible, when the person running the floor actually cares about the team, and when they are simply going through the managerial motions. The technical skills of casino management are learnable and important. But the ability to work with people, to actually manage human beings rather than positions on a rota, is what separates the supervisors and managers who build strong floors from those who simply occupy them. You are working with people. Keep that in mind. It sounds obvious when it is written down. Of course you are working with people. What else would you be working with? The reminder is necessary because the pressures of the role, the revenue targets, the commission, the expectations from above, the constant low-level friction of a busy floor can gradually shift a manager's focus away from the humans in front of them and toward the abstract metrics those humans are supposed to produce. When that shift happens, the first thing that goes is attentiveness. The manager who is focused on results starts to see dealers as performance units rather than individuals with different strengths and different pressures. A dealer who is slightly off their pace tonight might be dealing with something that has nothing to do with the casino. A dealer who is performing exceptionally well might be doing so quietly, without recognition, in a way that will eventually stop if nobody notices. The manager who is paying attention catches both. The manager who is watching the numbers catches neither. The casino floor is a high-pressure, often late-night, physically demanding environment. The people working in it are not asking for special treatment. They are asking for basic human acknowledgement, that they exist as more than a warm body at a table, that their effort is visible, and that the person responsible for their working conditions is paying enough attention to know when things are going well and when they are not. The line between friendly and professional. One of the more nuanced challenges of moving into a supervisory or management role, particularly when you have come up through the dealer ranks and know many of your team personally, is finding the right distance. Too distant, and you become a remote authority figure the team neither trusts nor opens up to. Too close, and the professional structure starts to blur in ways that create real problems. Favoritism, real or perceived, inconsistent standards, in situations where a personal relationship makes it harder to have a necessary professional conversation. The line is not always easy to find, and it moves depending on the individual and the context. But the general principle is stable. You can be warm, approachable, and actually interested in the people on your team without crossing into a friendship that compromises your ability to manage them. Friendliness is a style. Professionalism is a standard. They are not mutually exclusive, and the best managers hold both at once without apparent effort, though that ease usually reflects years of deliberate practice rather than natural disposition. The test is simple. Can you have a difficult conversation with this person without it damaging the relationship? Can you point out a mistake, enforce a standard, or make a decision they disagree with, and have it land as professional rather than personal? If the answer is yes, you have found the right distance. If the answer is complicated by the social dynamic you have built, the balance has tipped too far. Feedback in both directions. One of the most consistent failures of weak management is the asymmetry of feedback. Mistakes are corrected, usually if the manager has the confidence for it, but good work goes unacknowledged. The result is a team that hears from management primarily when something has gone wrong, and that experience shapes how the team relates to the management layer above them. Not positively. If someone on your team makes a mistake, tell them. Not in front of guests. Not in a way that humiliates or undermines. But clearly and specifically, without excessive softening that leaves them uncertain about what the actual issue was. Most people would rather receive honest, direct feedback then be left wondering whether the supervisor noticed or chose not to say anything. Clarity is a form of respect. The other half of this is equally important and frequently neglected. When someone improves, say so. When a dealer handles a difficult situation well, acknowledge it. When you notice that a newer team member has developed a skill or corrected something they were struggling with, let them know you have seen it. Recognition does not need to be elaborate or formal. A brief, sincere comment at the right moment costs nothing and delivers more to the recipient than most managers realize. There is a reason this matters more than it might seem. Researchers studying long-term relationships have estimated that it takes roughly 5 positive interactions to balance the weight of a single negative one. The brain holds on to criticism more vividly than praise, and the asymmetry compounds over months. A floor where corrections outnumber acknowledgments by a wide margin does not feel neutral to the people on it. It feels like a place where they are tolerated until they make a mistake. The team is watching how recognition and correction are distributed. If corrections are public and recognition is private or absent, the environment starts to feel adversarial. If both are handled with equal care and real attention, the team starts to trust that the feedback they receive reflects what is actually happening rather than the manager's mood or agenda. Understanding the ones who are struggling. Every team has people who are finding something difficult at any given time. A newer dealer still developing their confidence on a game. Someone going through a period personally that is bleeding into their focus at work, even if they would not say so. A staff member who is technically capable, but has been put in situations that do not suit their strengths. A person who needs more time to develop than the pace of the operation usually allows. How a manager handles these individuals says a great deal about the quality of their management overall. The instinct toward impatience is understandable. The floor has standards, the operation has needs, and a struggling dealer creates real pressures on a shift. But the instinct is also, in most cases, counterproductive. A person who is struggling and feels unsupported will keep struggling, or will disengage entirely. A person who is struggling and feels seen, who knows the manager has noticed and offered something useful and is not just waiting for them to fail, will usually find a way through it. This does not mean excusing persistent underperformance or carrying people who have no intention of improving. It means distinguishing between someone who is having a difficult stretch and someone who has stopped trying, and responding to each accordingly. That distinction requires attention and judgment, which brings us back to the same foundation. You are working with people, and people require more than procedural management. The honest part. Writing about management skills from the position of someone who has been a manager is uncomfortable territory. Self-evaluation in this area is unreliable almost by definition. The gaps in our own management are usually the ones we are least equipped to see. The supervisor who micromanages does not always feel like they are micromanaging. The manager who gives unclear feedback often believes they have been perfectly direct. The person who struggles with the friendly professional balance frequently does not notice when it has slipped. What can be said honestly is this. An article like this does not exist because the writer has done all of it perfectly. It exists because years on the casino floor, watching many different managers and supervisors work, some excellent, some not, make certain patterns impossible to miss. The qualities that produce good floors are not mysteries. They show up consistently in the managers who earn real respect from their teams, and their absence shows up just as consistently in the ones who do not. Try not to be too quick to judge a new manager or supervisor. Give them time. Watch how they handle pressure and see whether your first read was accurate or whether it was colored by something else entirely. Hunger, a bad shift, a pre-existing impression that the new person had no chance of overcoming on day one. The gut is not always wrong, but it is not always right either. The managers who deserve patience are the ones who are honestly trying to find the balance and have not quite got there yet. The ones who are not trying, who have already decided that authority is a substitute for skill, tend to make themselves known without much help from your gut at all. The best managers on any floor are the ones whose teams perform well not because they are afraid of disappointing them, but because they do not want to.